You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Skylar Butenchin.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. A court filing by the Department of Homeland Security confirms suspicions that the agency wants to put an ICE detention facility at the Newport Airport. That's according to Lincoln County, which says in a news release that the filing was part of the county's lawsuit to retain the Coast Guard helicopter at the airport. According to the county, DHS says it doesn't plan to start building a detention facility until at least May. In December, Lincoln County was able to get an injunction from Eugene federal judge Ann Aiken to keep the Coast Guard rescue helicopter in Newport for now. Shiloh Inn locations in Warrenton, Newport, and Bend have closed as part of the parent company's bankruptcy case. In Warrenton, the 63-room hotel off Harbor Drive is now listed as permanently closed on Shiloh Inn's reservation website. The hotel has frequently been in arrears to the city of Warrenton. In 2019, the hotel owed the city thousands of dollars in unpaid lodging taxes. The Shiloh Inn in Seaside has also owed that city thousands of dollars in lodging taxes and penalties over the years. The Seaside Shiloh Inn went up for sale in 2023 to help pay off debts. Shiloh Inn had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in October. That case was converted to Chapter 7 bankruptcy last week, which requires liquidation, where assets are sold to pay off debts. On Tuesday, Shiloh's attorney requested a continuance in the case. Shiloh Inn was founded in 1974 and has about 10 locations in the West. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Columbia Press.
Oregon's population barely ticked up last year, according to U.S. Census estimates released on Tuesday. The country as a whole had one of the slowest growth rates on record. Kyra Buckley reports.
Analysts at the U.S. Census Bureau say the country added 1.8 million people last year. That's barely a 0.5% more than the previous year on record. It could be a warning sign that economic growth is also slowing. Multnomah County economist Jake Pricino from the Oregon Employment Department says population increases help grow an economy.
That means there are more workers available to work, and that there's also more people to spend money.
But Oregon barely saw any population growth, adding just over 8,000 people from July 2024 to 2025, according to the census estimates. Meanwhile, Washington grew by more than 70,000 people to hit a population of 8 million for the first time. I'm Kyra Buckley reporting.
A chaotic scene played out over several hours Tuesday during an anti-ICE protest at the Eugene Federal Building. KLCC's Nathan Wilk reports.
The crowd fled at what sounded like flashbangs. A cloud of tear gas wafted through the air. Jay Smith sat on the sidewalk, covering one of his eyes. He told KLCC he'd leaned down to throw a gas canister away from the crowd when another one bounced off the ground and hit him in the face.
I was not there to agitate. I was not there to piss people off. I was just there to make sure that my friends got out safe, and they shot me in the eye.
Tuesday saw the largest scale response to date by federal law enforcement against the anti-ICE protesters who've regularly gathered at the Eugene Federal Building. Protesters say at least 9 demonstrators were detained throughout the day. KLCC has reached out to the Department of Homeland Security for comment. This is Nathan Wilk reporting in Eugene.
You're listening to KMUN, turning now to news from Washington State. The Washington State Senate has approved a measure to ban face masks for law enforcement officers, with certain exceptions. Democrat Javier Valdez of Seattle sponsored the bill. He made clear it is aimed at the recent use of masks by federal immigration enforcement officers.
This is not what public safety looks like in a democracy. This is what happens when accountability disappears and fear is allowed to take its place.
Republican Jeff Holey is a former Spokane police officer. He said he can't argue with the public concerns over masking, but he said only Congress can restrict what federal agents are doing.
This is beyond our pay grade. I'd love to think we could make a difference. Quite frankly, this is something that's out of our scope.
The bill passed along party lines 30-19. It now proceeds to the House. California passed a similar measure that is now being challenged by the Trump administration in court. They say officers need masks for their own safety.
Federal officials have been looking into commercial-grade ammonia leaks at the Hanford Nuclear Cleanup Site in Southeast Washington. NWPB's senior correspondent Anna King has more.
Enforcement officials from the U.S. Department of Energy came to Hanford last week. They were looking into the repeated anhydrous ammonia leaks. It's all happening at the Hanford Waste Treatment and Immobilization Plant. That's according to a source who works at Hanford, who asked to remain anonymous to protect their job. Federal reports dated back to at least December of 2024 show repeated instances of leaks. Ammonia is used to treat the exhaust that comes out of the plant's stack. If inhaled in quantity, ammonia can be deadly. One of the leaks required workers to take cover, a report from last July says. The Hanford Field Office of the Department of Energy and Washington State's Department of Ecology wouldn't comment. I'm Anna King.
This year, Seattle officials are putting a stronger emphasis on services for people arrested for public drug use. That's after drug possession arrests and charges climbed last year. Supporters of the new approach call it a hopeful moment. Skeptics worry that the city's hotspots for drug use and disorder will continue to suffer. KUOW's Amy Radel explains.
When Seattle police arrest someone at 12th and Jackson for public drug use, they may take the person to the East Precinct and release them into the care of Rihanna Dale. Dale knows what to say once the handcuffs come off.
It's not a good day today. I know it's not. Here's a cigarette. Here's a snack, friend. And, like, tell me what's going on. How did we get here and how can we make it better?
Dale does outreach for the city's Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, or LEAD. Stepping outside her Capitol Hill office, Dale runs into one of the clients she's working with. Reusing his initials, JL, he says he's grateful that his shoplifting charge was recently dismissed. Dale says he was found incompetent to stand trial. A recent success was getting him into housing.
He just got into his place in November of last year, and before that had been outside for 10 plus years.
LEAD is working to keep about 900 Seattle clients out of courts and jail, and the last city election is leaving them feeling hopeful. The program's founder, Lisa Dugard, is currently working for Mayor Katie Wilson's administration. And after public defenders found the city's drug charges were rarely resulting in treatment, the new city attorney, Erica Evans, said she'll divert cases away from prosecution whenever possible. She'll focus on treatment for those she does charge.
The last few years, having 90% of the people not getting treatment that come into this office is not accountable, not accountability. So we are going to improve those numbers. That is a priority of this administration.
LEAD scaled back some outreach and police training last year due to funding cuts, but it now has an additional $2 million for a total of $16 million this year after former Mayor Bruce Harrell championed a sales tax increase. In a recent podcast, Seattle Police Guild President Mike Solon took a dim view of the city's renewed emphasis on diversion.
There's not going to be any accountability for the offenders on the street who are consuming narcotics in front of you and your family.
LEAD says last year its clients made more than 2,000 connections with programs to address substance use, including treatment programs, medication, and Narcotics Anonymous. Former King County Sheriff Sue Rahr served as interim police chief in Seattle in 2024. She says she saw improvements to drug hotspots and urgency among cops to help people on the streets. But she says most officers were skeptical that diversion could interrupt addiction's vicious cycles.
There is a need, I believe, to take people into physical custody so that they can be stabilized long enough to exercise their personal autonomy to make a good decision.
Current Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes says he's hearing fears about street disorder increasing, but he says many types of crime are down and SPD officers have not stopped arresting people for public drug use.
What I will tell my officers and what I have told them, to be very specific, is that when we have probable cause and we have aggravating factors, our officers will make the arrests.
He says those factors include accosting people, refusing to leave a private business, and carrying or brandishing a weapon. When it comes to addressing hotspots for drug use like 12th and Jackson, Barnes says some solutions need more than police.
And that's what we're going to do. We're going to put together a real, I call it a whole of government approach to some of these particular areas. But more importantly, what people ask for more than anything else is consistency.
Barnes says he expects that the 165 officers hired last year will add more presence at hotspots like Little Saigon. With the additional funding, LEAD is staffing up too. Outreach coordinator Rihanna Dale says they use a dedicated phone to connect with police called the Greenlight phone, and Dale expects it to be ringing pretty frequently this year. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
This is KMUN News. The following stories come to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. A bill that aims to establish kit homes as an affordable housing option in Washington passed the state Senate unanimously yesterday. It now goes to the state House for further consideration. Republican State Senator Jeff Wilson sponsored the bill. It would direct Washington's Building Code Council to develop new, more efficient review rules specifically for kit homes of 800 feet or less. Kit homes can start at a cost of less than $10,000, and Wilson says they offer a way to build vitally needed housing at low cost. Wilson says he hopes the bill will make it across the finish line this year. He originally introduced his kit home bill in 2023. The state Senate unanimously approved the bill in 2024 and 2025, but both times it died without a vote in the House. Another new bill recently introduced in the Washington state legislature would allow for locally designated accident risk zones on public roads where crashes are common. Introduced by State Representative Mark Clicker of Walla Walla, the bill would let counties, cities, towns, and the Washington State Department of Transportation treat specific dangerous sections of roadway similar to construction zones. Safety markers would alert drivers to the zone, and fines would double for speed violations. Clicker says that two recent fatal crashes in his district highlight the need for the legislation. The bill says that after an accident risk zone is established, an engineering and traffic investigation of the zone would be conducted to identify safety improvements, including adjustments to the speed limits. Last July, two Pacific County employees filed a claim that alleged that County Deputy Prosecutor Michael Rothman subjected them to hostile behavior. Since then, the Pacific County Prosecutor's Office has been under heightened scrutiny. Attorney Victoria Vreeland, who is representing the two employees, moved the claim to a lawsuit in early November. Vreeland filed a complaint for damages and further relief in Lewis County Superior Court, which was then amended in December to include new allegations that Rothman and Chief Criminal Deputy Prosecutor Jennifer Zorn were intimidating potential witnesses. An internal Pacific County investigation into Chief Civil Deputy Prosecutor Craig Newman, conducted between mid-2024 and April 2025, included alleged concerns of Newman being impaired by alcohol on the job and not being properly prepared for court proceedings. Rothman has stated that he has never suspected Newman to be intoxicated on the job and that Newman denies the allegations. Earlier this month, Admiral Kevin Lundy officially assumed command as the 28th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Lundy takes the top leadership role at a pivotal moment as the Coast Guard continues its transformation through what's called Force Design 2028, the Coast Guard's most significant strategic overhaul since World War II. The Coast Guard, with over 76,000 service members, is a major employer and support for maritime and fisheries industries at the mouth of the Columbia River. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Read more online at chinookobserver.com. A historic Gary oak tree in Tumwater has been saved by a court ruling. It's estimated to be 400 years old. Indigenous communities and settlers used it as a trail marker. KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe has the story.
In 2024, the former mayor of Tumwater announced that the city would be removing the huge oak tree, citing safety concerns after it dropped a large branch. This prompted a public outcry, and a small group took legal action to stop the city from cutting the tree down. They argued that it's listed with Tumwater's Historic Preservation Commission, so only the commission can decide the tree's fate.
And that's how the law has been all along. We just had to get a court of appeals to back us up on that.
And that happened. Rhonda Larson Kramer is the group's lead attorney. She has donated countless hours to this fight.
Because I love this tree and I think it's the right thing to do, and I also do not like injustice.
Standing next to the tree in August of 2024, its massive canopy overhangs Old Highway 99 near a small airport. The chain-link fence that encircles its huge trunk is covered with flags and glittery signs put up by supporters. And here on this day is a member of Tumwater's Historic Preservation Commission, former Washington State Historical Society Director David Nicandri.
So this was historically a Native American concourse. Tribes would go from the Columbia River to Puget Sound. This was their original path. What we're looking at right now is the original segment of the Oregon Trail.
It's also known as the Cowlitz Trail. And this huge oak tree shows up in texts and oral histories as a waypoint and trail marker for people crossing the Cascade Mountains toward the coast.
So the tree is, the tree is a historic landmark without question.
All the energy that everybody's put into this case and this effort and this movement is worth it.
Attorney Rhonda Larson Kramer says this ruling ensures that this tree is protected under the law, not by political whim.
This case is a lesson that you can't succeed if you just try.
She also believes this was the first time a court has enforced local historic preservation protections for a natural structure rather than a building. She hopes it sets a precedent that could help other communities in the future. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
This is KMUN. Up next is the American Democracy Minute. Stay tuned after that for the Ship Report with Joanne Rideout.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have two stories from Virginia today. An effort by Democrats to gerrymander more congressional seats was blocked by a county court, and a federal judge found the Commonwealth's Felon Disenfranchisement Amendment violated a Reconstruction-era law. Virginia is one of the latest states to consider mid-decade redistricting in response to actions by red state legislatures to gerrymander more GOP congressional seats. Virginia's Democratic majority legislature passed a constitutional amendment ballot measure to authorize mid-decade redistricting and flip four GOP-held seats to Democrat in response. The Virginia Mercury reports that January 27th, a county judge struck down the proposed amendment as a legally invalid procedure which didn't follow established legislative rules. It's likely to be appealed. Courthouse News Service reports that January 22nd, a federal district judge, citing a 150-year-old federal law, sided with two returning citizens convicted of certain felonies to have their rights restored without requiring the governor's action. The judge found that when the Commonwealth constitutionally expanded the felony disenfranchisement criteria to include all felonies, it violated the narrower criteria in the federal 1870 Virginia Readmission Act. The decision could restore voting rights to thousands. We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.